Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Night Call, a production of iHeartRadio.
It's 1:19 a.m. on the Love Boat in Rio de Janeiro, and you're listening to Night Call.
Everybody, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I'm Molly Lambert, and with me, as always, are
Tess Lynch and
Emily Yoshida.
And joining us today is our special guest, Heather Havrileski. Heather is the author of the Ask Polly advice column in New York Magazine and the Ask Molly newsletter. She's also the author of three books and a longtime internet writer. Cool person all around.
Long time legend.
Legendary blogger. Welcome, Heather.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Heather's going to talk to us today about the Love Boat for Spooky Romance February. Because what's spookier than love at sea?
Love on a boat.
Trapped on a boat.
What is spookier than anything at sea?
There's no escape.
But first, we're going to take a night call, actually a night email. Hey, Night Call. I have had a couple Night Call relevant experiences recently I am writing to share. Sleep podcasts are certainly one expansion of the podcast medium, but I was visiting my parents last week when my mom informed me of the existence of dog podcasts, which you put on for your dog when you're gone. I'm not sure if there's more than one, but the one she, the dog, uses features random British actors telling your dog it's a good dog in various ways, as well as dropping random quotes from historical figures that they follow up. I don't think they were talking about dogs, but I think it still applies. I told a dog-owning friend this, and she was like, oh yeah, there's also dog TV now. So, this is the decade of dog media, apparently. Hopefully, the dogs will be inspired to create media of their own and ultimately save us all. Best, Charlie Heller.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie. What a great night email.
Seriously. Did either of you guys listen to the dog's favorite sounds or something. Or dogs.
It's not a dog
but
cast.
It's favorite with a U. So you
know, British dogs.
It's funny because Charlie linked, which we will link to an article in the Straits Times. It was like very British. It's like a Singapore news site. So it was like very British oriented. But I just thought that was funny. It is like Game of Thrones actors just saying, like, "You're such a good boy. Like, when you look at me like that, I'm just so happy. Like, I just want the very best for you." I guess you just leave it on in your living room when you have to leave the dog alone. Because it's 300 and some minutes. I did not listen to all 300 minutes.
Do you think people are listening to this that are not dogs?
I can see a use for it. I mean, it has an ASMR quality.
Is it calming?
Yeah, it's like very... I forget the name of the actress who was reading it, but it was very like it was in a very like low, like I'm just speaking to you. Like the voice that you would use if you had the dog like right in front
it's
of your face.
It's dog timbre.
Yeah, dog timbre. Yeah.
Your ass smells delicious.
Have you been eating your greenies?
It was, right, is it like a fellow dog talking to you or is it a person?
I think it's just supposed to be like the best person you could leave your dog with.
Is a British person who speaks to them calmingly?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, the dog media stuff and the dog TV, that's not new. Like, I remember there used to be, I definitely remember
cat TV, I remember.
And cat VHSs and stuff.
It was
stuff.
A lot of aquariums.
Yes.
Dog TV is the greatest channel in the world. I don't know where it comes from, but my parents got it as like a preview for a week or two once.
Really?
And my mom got obsessed with it. And then I also got obsessed with it because it was like programmed with shows, but the shows were like a centipede on the wall with lights on it. And then another show would be like birds in the park. So
just, dogs and stoners have a huge overlap.
Yeah. It was really good slow TV. It was, you know, and some of them were like from the point of view of a dog, just like a shot of like a dog running around a beach. But the idea was you're supposed to leave it on for your dog when you left the house. That is what I would think a dog podcast would be like, that it would be like more of a field recording.
Yeah, no, I think it's not meant to be disorienting in that way. It's not supposed to take you to another place as a dog.
If like, it's too stimulating, it's the dog will bark, right? Yeah. And you don't want the dog. It's to placate the dog.
What if the dog is like a strange British man is in the house trying to lure me away from my true owners?
I mean, it's probably good they have like both male and female voices on it just so that, you know, you can, if your dog responds better to women, then, you know, you can hear a nice lady talking or whatever. Which is definitely a thing.
Do you have pets that respond to media?
My mom just sent me a picture that her cat, Satsuki, has just discovered video, like has started responding to it for the first time. She had a YouTube video that was playing on our laptop on the bed, and like she showed me a picture of like the cat just like pawing at the screen, which is like, and she's kind of... She's not young. Like, she's like 9 years old or something like that. And I'm like, this is feels like a late breaking thing for her to be tuned into.
She saw the monolith.
Yeah. It's like suddenly just like the fourth wall broke down.
Heather, do your dogs watch TV?
They do. I feel like dogs, I mean, when I was younger, my dogs did not see things on TV. But then my last set of dogs, who are dead now, God rest their souls.
All right.
But I have two new replacement dogs. God bless.
Do they know that they're the replacement dogs? Yes.
One of them is definitely a recruited rescue doppelganger of the other dog. And the other one was named POTUS, and she was really, really aloof.
Like president?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. But
the new one is named Fig, and she's really needy. So it's sort of like, but they look, I'm like the dog pervert that gets the dog that, I mean, people do that. They get the same breed, right? But with rescue dogs, you actually have to like scour the internet for where is my dog that looks like my other dog? But both of my dogs now, one of them's kind of a Jack Russell Chihuahua and the other one's, I don't know, something. But they look at animals when an animal appears on the TV.
Yeah. I think there's something about like the movement of wildlife that translates, like even though it's out of context
and sounds.
On a box.
One of my cats definitely will paw at the screen when an animal appears, especially a bird.
Which one, Drexel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also yesterday I was watching a cat documentary and one of the cats at least definitely like perked up and started watching it.
Was it for the cats?
It was not. It was for me.
Well, people just want to see themselves in
media. I only got like halfway through
representation of cats.
It was a cat documentary. I think it was called Hashtag Meow.
Maybe.
But it was
about millennial cats.
It was on Netflix, I think. It was about the history of cat memes.
Oh my God.
So it started with like Neon Cat. And like it kind of, it was actually interesting. I did stop watching it halfway through. But the first half was like, there was this pre-gentrified internet where cats got famous organically, like Lil Bub. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, and then there was this shift at a certain point where people were like, I'm getting a cat to try and make it famous on the internet.
Yeah.
So that was fascinating. But there was like a person who's like the cat meme archivist at the Museum of the Moving Image.
Oh, wow. Well,
that's a title.
I believe so,
That's fascinating. That I feel like they're doing the good work there, though.
Yeah, they were like, this is the one thing that remains like a constant on the internet is animal memes.
Yeah.
It's like the one thing everyone can agree is like a good thing on the internet.
There aren't enough animal memes on Twitter lately, I feel like. Yeah. It's all just gloom and doom, and there's I want more.
You see that owl that can run?
No.
I posted it today.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
I liked the RoboCat who was a victim of frostbite in Siberia and has robotic legs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, Michael.
That was a good animal meme. I have now eliminated all of the suggested topics from Twitter, so it's only weather and cats.
Oh.
Which is very disorienting.
That's
I have to say. And also the cream doesn't necessarily rise to the top with the cats that become popular on Twitter. Yeah. I have to say, like, not to shame these cats, but they're not the best cats I've seen. And I'm not even that picky, but some of those cats are really low tier cats.
It's true that, like, I've seen that there has been a downturn in the quality of cat. Like, I feel like the most cat that you see now is the one that's sitting at the table opposite Taylor Armstrong in that meme of like where she's like yelling
the
at
white
the cat.
Cat.
Yeah, the white cat.
Love
at the
that
table.
Cat. There are some famous ones, but this documentary was also like, no cat will ever be as famous again as Lil Bub. Like, universally famous.
And,
like,
there's and two... Boo on the dog side.
Yeah,
Boo.
And Marnie.
Yeah.
But also, like, Marnie and Lil Bub were both like rescue pets with sort of like weird health conditions. Which is also what made them like lovable.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, you genuinely just got like a, like the guy who does Lil Bub was just like, no, I wasn't like trying to like
who make does my Lil cat Bub
famous.
Yeah, now that in the rescues, they're like scouring the rescues for fucked up faces.
Yeah. Right? I did an event with Marnie once where I interviewed her on a stage.
Really?
What did she have to say?
I interviewed her caretaker, Shirley Braha, who is cool. And I was asking her questions about Marnie, like, when did you get her? And, you know, what does she like to eat?
The hard-hitting questions.
But it was an audience of mostly kids. It was at the Echoplex. And it was like Beatlemania. Like,
oh,
the kids were just like, oh, like Marnie just walked around on the stage and the kids were just like,
Were they all trying to like take pictures of her and stuff?
Oh, and then she would like stick her tongue out and they'd freak out again. And then she'd like flop over. It was amazing.
That's hilarious.
The most fame I've ever been around.
Is Marnie still alive?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It was a beautiful experience. You're all transformed.
I always get concerned.
Speaking of beautiful experiences that transform everyone who passes through them, Heather, you came to talk to us about a little show called The Love Boat.
Yes, I did. I'm here to speak of The Love Boat.
We were going to do this anyway for Spooky Love February. But then also, Fred Silverman just passed away, who is this TV executive who's famous for greenlighting, among other things, The Love Boat. He is known for doing The Rural Purge, where they canceled Green Acres and the Beverly Hillbillies to go after a more sophisticated audience.
The Cruisers.
With The Love Boat?
Well, he greenlit Love Boat and Charlie's Angels. So he, like, you know, was responsible for this whole genre, but he also greenlit, like, All in the Family and the Jeffersons and stuff. Like, he's a big figure in TV. So it's almost like there's actually a reason that we're talking about the Love Boat.
Amazing.
We searched high and low for a reason, and look.
Yes. You know what? There are so many tie-ins.
Our powers are too strong.
The Love Boat, well, okay, so I was born in 1970. Someone recently told me, you really shouldn't tell people your age anymore. It's
what?
Done. Yeah.
Like, who said that to you?
A woman said that to me. No. A woman in the public eye. She was like, yuck. No more speaking of your age. Just forget your age. I was like, I don't know. It's kind of fun to flip people out a little. I don't really get it. But the Love Boat in the 70s. Okay, so it was on from 1977 to 1987. Those were the years that I was 7 to 17. I did not watch it when I was 17. I think you'll find that reassuring. But at the age of 7, I think Star Wars came out in 76. So Love Boat and Star Wars, I feel like, are sort of akin, because the Love Boat was a show. Because
they're both on ships.
Yeah, they have ships. Yeah.
They're both on ships. Yes.
Neither on land.
Death Star, cruise ship, similar. But the Love Boat was a show where basically you had the rotating guests. It was, I guess that's called, what is it called? Like a serial where there are rotating people in and out, right?
An anthology?
No, because it always is the same ship captain.
Yeah, like you have the set characters, kind of like Law and Order,
yeah.
Right? Like you have these rotating storylines. And typically, so the quintessential story is two people come to the Love Boat with, it's a little bit like Fantasy Island. Fantasy Island was on after the Love Boat. Okay. But a couple comes, and one of them is secretly dying. Okay, but she doesn't want to tell her partner. So they just keep, basically like almost every other scene is just a couple on the deck of the Love Boat clinking little champagne glasses. It was sort of like an escapist luxury, you know, akin to Dynasty, mm-hmm. Dallas, Falcon's Crest. It was sort of like the middle class vision of what luxury was.
I feel like I didn't watch a lot of these shows, but they still completely shaped my idea of what is like luxury.
Aspirational, yeah.
Like when I think of rich people, I'm still like Dynasty. That is like how you should dress if you're rich.
Like crazy hair, flushed, strange, overly tanned faces, shoulder pads.
Yeah.
Low cut shit. I'm dressed like
I'm wait. So who are the main cast of the Love Boat? It's like the crew of the ship.
The crew of the ship. So there's Gavin McLeod, mm-hmm. who was we know from such things as Mary Tyler Moore Show. Mm-hmm. He was Murray, I think, mm-hmm. on Mary Tyler Moore. There is, I didn't write down the other ones. There's the Isaac. Okay, so I know the character names.
Yeah.
That there weren't like super
the
big stars. Yeah, Isaac was the bartender.
I went to camp with his son.
Oh, nice. You went to camp?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Amazing. So Isaac and Gopher are like the two goofy, like, hey, let's have a party. Hey, check out the girls kind of guys. Gopher's like the, I don't know, he's like a lower down on the ship. Isaac is the bartender, and he, you know, in the opening credits, he's like, I mean, it's sort of like the opening credits that people spoof now on, you know, Bachelor in Paradise, like shaking the shaker.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Hey, points. Hey, hey.
Bachelor in Paradise is totally a Love Boat ripoff.
Yeah.
You're right.
Exactly. And people, there's a similar amount of melodrama.
Yeah.
There's the classic shot, at least 4 or 5 times per episode, there's just a shot of tits or ass. Like asses walking, like butt cheeks walking by in a bikini. And then, you know, Gopher or Isaac are like, whoa, there's an ass right there.
That was probably the first time you could do that on television.
Yeah.
Because again, I did read a lot about Fred Silverman, and they were like, he pioneered jiggle vision with shows like that and Charlie's Angels.
Oh, so jiggle vision is just like check out the ass?
Yeah, like shows that people thought were stupid, but lots of people watched because they had like TNA and they were very like comforting in their regularity.
Yeah.
It's like decorative TNA though. It wasn't like plot driven. It was just like, oh, in between scenes, you might see a butt.
Right. Yeah. And then like the end point is Baywatch.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's
That's
no
plot-driven TNA.
Yeah. There's a purpose to those asses bouncing down the beach. Those asses have a goal.
I mean, what ass doesn't have a goal?
Even the asses of dog TV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It all comes back.
But there wasn't any dirtiness.
Like, there wasn't.
Yeah, people like would sort of like talk about making love, I guess. You know, it was 1977, making love.
It seems very soft rock.
Yeah, yeah. Soft porn, soft rock. I mean,
yeah.
It's like middle class romance. Like, but see, you got to put it in the context of like the movies of the time. Like, did you ever see, okay, what is the name of that movie? The quintessential kind of like shitty 80s movie to me is this Michelle Pfeiffer and Mel Gibson fall in love. I just remember this scene where they make love in a hot tub.
Oh, yeah.
It's Tequila Sunrise.
Oh, you're speaking my language.
Sounds great.
And then they burst out of, and it's like soaring sax, and they burst out of the hot tub while fucking. And you're like, yeah, fucking.
Yeah. It's not like that on The Love Boat.
No,
is what
no,
you're
no.
saying?
Well, there's, I mean, the movie, whisper. There were a lot of, like, okay, so can we talk about love scenes? Have you guys ever talked about just the existence?
Sex scenes?
Yeah, the existence
we
of a sex
scene. We did an erotic odyssey
yeah. that was all. Yeah, all erotic thrillers.
Yeah. But from what era?
Like from the late 80s, early 90s.
Actually, okay. Early 80s to, yeah, mid-90s, I would say.
From about the time, probably.
Yeah,
when
right around there.
Suddenly okay to show that.
The 9.5 weeks era.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like I just had this epiphany one day where I was like, what happened to sex scenes? You know, like they used to be long.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But Love Boat was sort of like worked around that with, it was mostly really about the cheesiness of like, oh God, I just love you so God. You're just, I'm so in love with you.
It still had to be about love in order to pass standards.
But the tension was like a secret between the couples or some sort of like mortal peril.
There was usually some stupid twist like I'm dying and I can't tell. There was usually it was usually like I can't really tell. It was not the era of let's process our emotions together on this deck with our champagne. It was more like, oh, I'm going to go change into something more comfortable. You know, or, you know, like everything happened behind closed doors like. But, you know, you imagine them just having the most gruelingly dull missionary sex in their little terrible bed.
So people are repressed on The Love Boat?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was like they were all wearing lip gloss. Like, how hot could it get?
I mean, it seems, you know, a lot of people get seasick.
Yeah, I feel like there wasn't a lot of, like, realism. There wasn't a lot of vomiting over the side.
The idea of having sex on a cruise ship. I've never been on a cruise ship, nor have I had sex on a cruise ship, obviously. But
yet.
The idea, yet, we'll see.
Put it into the universe.
Cruise ship sponsor night call. But I'm confused if that's like an erotic thing, those little tiny.
The million.
Are the beds very small? Like,
who's our cruise ship expert?
Emily's been on two.
Well, the beds tend to be two smaller beds pushed together, kind of.
Oh, really?
Emily, are you
style.
In the mile long club?
No comment. Lord.
Whoa.
Maybe mile that's long. Why they were having
the mile high club is in the air.
It should be like league.
The mile
league.
Yard.
Yeah. Well, that would be for a summary.
The 10,000 league club.
Yeah. That would be amazing.
Well, I went to the estate sale of Geraldine Saunders, who's the woman who wrote the book that The Love Boat was a spinoff of. And I got tipped about her estate sale. It was in Glendale. And it was just a really amazing Glendale estate sale of this woman who was like this self-made mogul who had written this book. She had like tried to be a celebrity astrologer. She was married to, I think his name is Omar Starr or something. She was married to another super famous astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of pioneered like being celebrity astrologers. And then she became the first female cruise director. She had this obsession with like, I want to work on a cruise and be in charge. And she did. So they were like, they had her cruise director jacket for sale. But she wrote this book about it called The Love Boat, about using astrology to like matchmake on the cruise. The back of the book is amazing. I think I talked about it here once before because it's like, this vivacious, voluptuous Virgo from Glendale takes you on a romantic cruise and like, who knows what will happen on a ship? Like people might find love on The Love Boat. And then somebody bought it, the original taking an IP and turning it into a show. And she had a Love Boat lifesaver around her pool.
Oh, my God. Not did she be on the book club.
Did she have artifacts, other artifacts from the actual show?
No, it was more artifacts from her astrology career that they had. And a million copies of the Love Boat, which I...
Was she already like wealthy just from being an astrologer before that? Or is that like...
It seemed like she was just sort of a nonstop hustler. Yeah. Like she was a girl boss. She was like a model. And then she like just kept finding ways to sort of like try to get famous for doing something
weird. That's exactly like me, Molly. That's how I am.
I feel like now she would have just done an astrology cruise if it was today.
Done the wellness cruise.
The well.
Well, she had, she invented this like alternate Ouija board that they had all these prints of that I bought one of.
Whoa.
And put it up over
What's it called?
I forget, but I'll send you a photo. It's totally weird. It's just like its own thing. It's very occult looking.
Is it the alphabet or is it something else that you're...
It's like, it's its own kind of like wheel with like zodiac and then like maybe chakras and different parts of the, parts of the body and sun signs and stuff. It's very weird.
Have you tried to use it?
No. I'm a little scared of it, but I did buy it and like put it in my house, so not
that scared.
So
you're already cursed. Yeah. Now you have to use it.
Or blessed. Yeah. She was also, her whole life story was super interesting. She was married to a guy who was like mysteriously murdered, who I think he wrote The Wild Bunch. She was married to a bunch of interesting dudes. And then she also at her house had a million headshots of hot guys.
Nice.
Like, current day, because she was like working on some project.
Sure.
And she had some other romance novels she'd written. So it was like all these romance novel looking guys, like contact sheets of them like running on the beach.
Whoa. Did she, so she was a super horny gal.
Yeah.
And she defined the horniness of the 70s.
Yeah.
So she was a groundbreaking human.
Totally. And this, like, her house was amazing because it was like a dream, like, 70s party palace for, like, a self-made, like, you know, lady. Mm-hmm. It was just totally.
Was she single when she died?
No idea.
And was it did it seem like a party house, like in active use?
It seemed like a party house from the 1960s.
Oh.
But like the early 1960s. Wow. It felt more like my grandparents' house than like a swingin', like Austin Powers, you know, bachelorette pad. But I don't know. It was just fascinating.
How many times do you think she was married? Could you tell?
Well, at least three, I think.
That's a very LA archetype.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like someone with a kind of obscure career that you're like, what the hell? What did you do? Whoa, you did all this. And you make a fortune and then you're just like, I think I'll just fuck a lot of guys.
Yeah. And live in the hills of Glendale.
This is exactly like me. This woman is like my doppelganger. For a while in the early 2000s, I had a series of parties called Fucky's Drunk Boat. And sometimes we get confused and call it Drunkie's Fuck Boat. So the emphasis was either on fucking or getting drunk, depending. And people really responded to that name, and they were always good parties, and people always got drunk. And people, I'm going to say that people always fucked. I didn't see it.
So what you're saying is the Love Boat did inspire.
It did. A really classy early aughts corollary.
Halcyon, like Y2K era debauchery.
It was.
Were there any episodes of the Love Boat that particularly stuck with you, for better or worse?
The one about, okay, so pretty much the experience of watching The Love Boat was just like, especially at age 7, was like, who the fuck is that? Was like the primary feeling you had, because Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, who's that? It's like the people who are too old for you to understand who they are, they were all on that show for me. And some of them were like, you know, borderline silent era, you know? Because it's 70s, right? So like,
they're still hanging around.
David Hasselhoff, Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly was on the Love Boat?
Yes. Betty White, Marie Osmond, Florence Henderson. I mean, that's Brady Bunch, right? Carol Channing.
Yeah, I think everybody was on the Love Boat.
Patty Duke.
You only had to do it for like a day or two.
You only had to do it for a day. And I'm sure that the casting director was someone who just like, you just wanted to appease, maybe.
That is a really smart idea. It feels like there aren't, like, are there any shows like that now that are just like, I will say, actually, this is like, I've gotten obsessed with Below Deck on Bravo, which is like a semi-documentary real reality show.
It's the work boat.
It's the work boat. Well, it's a show about people who work, who live and work on a boat. That's like a luxury yacht. And then they have a different person on every week. And they are sometimes like semi-famous people, but they're like Bravo celebrities, like Bravo famous people. So like the only people I knew who they were, one of them was the Queen of Versailles. That woman who there was a documentary about her.
Oh, yeah.
Building this insane house.
Are they supposed to be themselves? Are they just show up in their, are they just?
Yeah, it's a real show about like the chefs are always divas. It's fascinating because it's also like, it's very unglamorous to work on the boat, but people spend so much money to go on the boat.
Yeah.
And if the weather is bad, there's just nothing they can do about it.
No, it really conveys how actually cramped it is on a boat, too.
It's not a luxury version of, like, showing. Yeah, it's not like, oh, and they live in a cool apartment on this boat. It's like, no, they live in this dorm.
Yeah, like in bunk beds.
Have to be undercover, like, after hours.
Yeah.
And so they kind of hate each other, probably.
Yes, they get in huge feuds. They hook up with each other a lot.
Oh.
It's better.
Where do they hook up? I mean, that's kind of
that's the question. They hook up in the bunk bed. This discussion. Yeah.
They hook up in the bunk
bed. How do you hook up in a bunk bed?
You make your
you
room,
just pick the you, you go make down your roommate or you go,
go
up.
Away. Yeah, you just
because I've been to college.
Yeah,
right?
Come on. But they all are like stressed out about it because they're like, if we hook up, then we're trapped on a boat together afterwards, and that almost always causes problems. I don't think there's been any like successful relationships to come out of it on the show.
Is the whole series one, is there a different person every episode?
Yeah, and there's three franchises now. There's three branches of the Below Deck franchise. There's regular Below Deck Med, and which is Mediterranean, and they just introduced another one that's like a smaller boat.
Ugh.
It's like Below Deck Yacht or something.
No. The smaller boat for me. I draw the line.
What if Below Deck, well, but all, smaller?
They're all anchored around, like, the captain is a really interesting sort of salty dog on all of them. It's
is
like
it the same guy?
No, it's a guy on the main one, and then it's, like, this woman on the other one.
Oh.
And then the person who's, like, the head, like, the director of the cruise or whatever, gets totally screwed by everybody else. Like, everybody hates them because they're the person who has to tell everyone to, like, do their job all the time.
Yeah.
But they're really interesting. Both of the women on both of, like, both of that show, it's like, you have to be such a specific type of person to be like, I want to spend my life on the sea away from everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a rescue dog lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like rescue shelter ladies. Specific.
They're really
sort of
intense
human.
Ones. Yeah. Yeah.
Specific.
It's not just the rescue dogs, it's the rescue cats too.
Yeah, it's like, I don't like your hat, you can't rescue this cat.
One of the, you definitely get the sense that they're like running from something, and then sometimes you like find out what it is. It's a great show. Me and Steven Soderbergh agree. It was it was all over his things he watches list.
That's so funny.
It's very popular, obviously, because there are three different
things. And it kind of, and now that the Vanderpump Rules cast is a little bit older and more settled, it delivers more of the sort of like people hooking
chaos.
Up and getting drunk.
Yeah.
It's very chaotic.
Was Love Boat, was that shot on location ever at all, or was it all on stages?
Oh, I think a lot of stages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember the balcony, you know, and it was sort of like blue screen of ocean behind, shit like that.
Yeah.
But then they'd have like the, we're going to Australia,
right.
You know, like stunt.
And then they'd actually go. So
yeah, and they'd actually go and they'd be like, oh my God, it's Sydney Harbor. Insane.
Just get the one shot of people walking down a street, like on location.
Yeah.
It's
we
went there.
Yeah, right.
The koala on their shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah. A nice ass and some tight white pants. She's Australian.
You're really selling us the
I
love,
know.
Though.
All of a sudden. Yeah. Also, I just really want to read that book now.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
Yes. I go like full Love Boat.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's anything like the show, though. You know, if it's cheesier, if it's just like.
I think it's also more about like astrology based matchmaking,
which I'm so into, especially if you can't escape, because then you have to submit to the suggestion that you're preordained to be with this person who's also on the boat.
Yeah, it seems like fate automatically.
Right.
Wow, we're going to get right back into something that pertains to this after this quick ad break.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Night Call. Emily has been beamed up temporarily, but we are still here with Heather Havrileski.
I'm still here.
Talking about spooky love. Today's spooky love main course, two stories about two couples.
The culty couples.
The culty couples that will
the best kind.
Put their way in your heart.
So we're going to start off with listener Marit shared an article from Vice about a YouTube cult that is a very Night Call story. So there's this online spirituality school that's in scare quotes called Twin Flames Universe that was started by a pair of YouTubers named Jeff and Shalia, also known as Ender Ionithos.
Going to show you a picture of them, Heather.
And oh my gosh,
so you can get the visual.
Oh yeah, I'd like to see that as well.
Because she was like, are they polished looking? And I was like, no.
No.
They look just like new agey YouTubers.
So they charge more than $4,000 a month for access, or maybe just $4,000 period. I guess you have, it's kind of like you're choosing from a menu of services. Oh, yes. Okay. So, yeah, these people.
Does that fit?
That fits for me. They look like they're basking in the warm glow of their
They look
cult.
Like they might sell you some mushrooms at a fish show or something.
Yeah, but they're selling you much more than that, yeah, guys.
Not that we would ever go to fish shows.
I would.
No, I would not.
Sort of nerdy.
Little nerdy?
Yeah, a little nerdy for a YouTuber. Not
They just look kind of like
goopy.
Jazzed up on the Jesus or something. So they have a menu of services that cost more than $4,000 a month. It's new agey videos, workshops, something called mind alignment therapy.
Yes, a two-day ascension workshop during which you can
Which sounds exactly like our Patreon, by the way. Like a lot of this is formulated exactly like
our
Patreon.
Well, this all sounds just like our Patreon.
It does.
But we're not cutting you off from your families. Like
no. Well,
would.
So the goal... The
Do
like,
you go somewhere?
No. This is...
What?
I mean, I don't think so. From what I understood
from
Vice...
No, it says it was in Canada.
Vice.
It said... I will read from the story.
Yeah.
Twin Flames Universe led by two glassy-eyed Michigan YouTubers calling themselves Jeff and Shalea Birchall, a 30-year-old single mom, bought tickets for a two-day ascension workshop in Canada.
Oh, yeah. So there's some of those,
July
too.
July 27th and 28th. Marketing materials for the event promised participants would experience heaven on earth.
Ooh. But it's also, so the Twin Flames thing is that they, the YouTubers are claiming that they will help you find your soulmate. Your twin flame, but there's also like
they also own the domain lifepurposeclass.com.
Oh, they beat us to it. So unfair.
We can get .net.
Yeah, .org. So the article features a couple different people who have been involved with this group. One of them is the single mom named Lene. So she became a community member. There's kind of like an MLM element to this. You have to, once you join, a lot of your time is volunteer work to, spent recruiting other members, calling members and trying to sell them stuff. So she was looking for her twin flame and she became convinced that it was this guy from her gym who was married and not interested in her. But because the tactic, they're like, if you find them and you know that's your twin flame, like, don't give up.
Oh, yeah. This is
crazy. You know, you go for it.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
So she said she was surprised that she wasn't served a restraining order. She was like, I stalked this man.
Yeah, she showed up at his work.
Yeah, she would, and just be like, you need to accept that we're twin flames.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And was he, what did he do?
He just said no. He was like, no, thank
like, no,
you.
No, I'm married.
But I think it would seem to me that if you're that deep in this cult, you're giving off such a vibe that probably, hopefully, makes people kind of sensitive to you. You know what I mean? Like, he just sounded like he didn't want to go after her. But she kind of implied, without stating directly, I think, that other people in the cult had been... You know, people had been much firmer
in
their
Facebook
no
posts,
thank yous.
The couple leading Twin Flames Universe openly call themselves the Master Christ.
Yes.
And their associates are now attempting to start a tax-exempt church based on their teachings.
What they called, the two of them called themselves the Master Christ.
The Master Christ.
It's technically the Master Christ, eternal ruler of all creation by God's loving hand.
Oh my God, that's what it says on my business card.
Me too!
I think they might be my twin flames.
Triplet flames. Yeah. But also, there were, I guess, people on Reddit ex-members started kind of talking about this, which may have led to, you know, the article being written in the first place. But they were really encouraged to disconnect from their families unless the family members gave them money that they would then give to the Twin Flames people. So parents, I think a lot of these people are in their 20s and 30s.
And it's a love cult.
It's a love cult.
So it's like, this is super interesting.
The love cult.
It says, Twin Flames Universe conflates romance and enlightenment in disturbing ways, ex-members say. Achieving harmonious union with a twin flame was promoted as a cure-all for life problems, while sickness or romantic failure was attributed to not aligning with God or the group.
The mind alignment element to me is the scariest. I mean, stalking people's no good.
I mean, how scary is the term alignment? Mind alignment? Uh-huh. Aligned with what?
Alignment. Well, also, they claimed that they healed stage 4 terminal breast cancer with their mind alignment. They also claim to be able to help PTSD and severe depression, which they clearly could not. So there have been stories about people not doing well after involvement with the cult.
Yeah, there's a story about somebody committing suicide that they saw as it was because they used the cult for therapy instead of getting real therapy.
Yeah, and then they had to put disclaimers on their Facebook and say,
they did put a disclaimer being like, if you're suicidal, call the suicide hotline, don't ask us. They are still running this cult and say that they have done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Somebody tried to leave and they were like, said some really fucked up things.
Yeah.
And then they were like, we're just exposing you to the real world. This is what it's like if you leave Twin Flame.
As long as you're not aligned.
Yeah.
You're a jerk. I want to know, do they pay $4,000 a month?
So, okay. To be members? I lied about the $4,000 a month. So it's
there's
a la carte.
$2,200 a year, I think, package.
But then
to,
there's.
Like, get in.
But that's part of it, but they encourage you to upsell to other members so you can get that, but then you also might want to take a bunch of coursework that's extra. So they said it can easily become more than $4,000, and maybe it was a month, maybe not, but I didn't want to. I mean, if it's a year, that's scary to me.
Some other cults we've talked about where it's essentially they're just a for-profit university offering classes in their own made-up stuff.
It reminds me of the Forum.
Yeah.
Did you guys do the Forum at all?
No.
Was that kind of an LA thing partially? Or
I think it's a California thing. Mm-hmm. There was something, there was a controversy involving Cafe Gratitude doing it, being associated with Landmark Forum.
Oh, yeah. Landmark Forum, yeah.
Yeah.
With Werner, wait a minute.
I do think.
I'm going to get the name wrong. Werner Eckhart or something like that? No, Eckhart Tolle. I don't know. I got to look it up. I did the Forum when I was a kid.
Really?
Is the Forum, is that different from Landmark Forum?
No, it's the same thing.
Well, let's explain in case people don't know what the Landmark Forum is. The view from inside.
My experience with it was that my mom had just gotten divorced and was kind of vulnerable. And a friend of hers, it's sort of like that middle age, new age kind of thing that was happening in the 80s, right? So, it's sort of like divorcees, middle age, the 80s, these things align. It's a mind alignment.
Mind alignment.
But basically, you go to this hotel, right? You're in a hotel conference room, and this very authoritative person stands at the front of the room, and you have to ask to use the bathroom. You're supposed to log all of your Tylenol if you take, you're not supposed to take anything.
You're supposed to be clean.
Yeah.
Clean slate.
And you have to ask permission to get your asthma meds or whatever. And then there's a lot of I just remember, and I think you have to sign something that says you'll never tell anyone about the technologies that you learn. You know how they always use ridiculous words for things like the special technology. It's like, you mean the refrigerator magnet poetry you did in front of the room? That technology? But basically, the idea was sort of like you have to own everything that's happened to you. Mm. You take responsibility for everything in your life.
So you're not a victim.
So you're not playing the blame game. And you're also just like, as if I chose. So then I just remember someone standing up and saying, I did not choose to get cancer. I'm not taking responsibility for my cancer.
Good for them.
And this guy was, it's always kind of a authoritative, ex-military guy, gets in your face and is like, no, it'll help you and blah, blah, blah. And then everyone cries and holds hands. And some people hate it. And they're like, this sucks. And there's a little bit of fomenting of rebellion within the. I mean, it's sort of effective in some ways. There are these touching moments.
And you're in a group and there's you can be manipulated in a group.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember doing something where you stare at someone really close.
Oh, that's that's an Esalen thing supposedly too.
You have to feel connected, you're just silently feeling your connection with someone.
Right. So much of this is just acting class.
It is all acting classes. I mean?
And everything feels like it should end in fucking, but it never does.
Right. Yeah. No, but a lot of.
Unless it does, I guess. Sometimes it does.
But it does. Well, at Esalen, maybe.
What was your response? Did you like it?
I was kind of into psychology. I think I was maybe, I feel like I might have been a freshman in college. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of into like the fact that everyone was getting straight to the facts of their lives. Like
cut the shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're not around that much at age, you know, 19. So it sort of was refreshing that way. Yeah. But it's also kind of creepy because you're like 19 and you're in a room full of 45-year-olds. And right. They're all like, tell me. You know, and like a 45-year-old can hold eye contact with you right. for a long time. And when you're 19, you're just like, God damn, stop it. Yeah. You feel your awkwardness a lot in that scenario. I don't know. I thought it was kind of a cult, honestly. But it sort of helped my mom a little. Like, she got something out of it. And it was almost like a vehicle for her to talk to me mm-hmm. about her feelings and for me to talk about my feelings. And so that it was kind of like a door opened in a way. Mm-hmm. But then we both kind of thought it was bullshit afterwards.
You're like, we could have done this at home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. But see, that's the thing. That's why these things exist. It's like, if we did that at home, yeah. we'd just do it over a glass of wine on right. any given night. But that was not the context of the way I was raised.
Well, there are weird. We
that that would have been creepy. Are you kidding? In our house, that's fucked
Let's
up.
Let's have a real talk. I think there's something really reassuring about being told what to do and being given rules. And so, in a way, especially I think if you're a single mom, like the you know person in the Vice article was, you just. Like when you feel out of control and like you need like a strong community, sometimes having rules makes you feel as though your interaction is more authentic somehow, I think.
But it also makes you feel fragile and vulnerable. I mean, they really break you down, right? Mm-hmm. You can't take a bathroom break. You're like a child.
Well, that
asking you to go to the bathroom is so strange.
Yeah, and taking your medicine away, like that seems kind of... There's something dicey? Weird about that. Dicey. Yeah.
There was a lot of aggression towards questioning any of the rules.
It seems
rules.
A little bit like we're testing your free will.
Right.
Your commitment to free will.
Is it still around?
I just looked it up to see. Apparently Panda Express training involves it because it's also
has like a corporate element.
Well, because it's like people use it all the time for like corporate retreats. Mm.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. That is where it still thrives. That was the Cafe Gratitude thing. They sell it as like a program to companies being like, so your employees can get to know each other.
Can you imagine working at Panda Express knowing like this is probably like one of many jobs like this in a line kind of thing and having to bond with your coworkers that intensely and then being like, peace.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm off to the next.
I do think that is a lot of just all corporate retreats I think are weird in that way. Mm-hmm. Like anyone I know who's had to go on one, it is like they... you know, put you in a hotel away from everybody else and then you have to do like trust falls. Even if it's not like hippie stuff anymore, it's still like these weird group bonding exercises.
Well, escape rooms were popular for that purpose for a while.
Yeah, which also seems weird.
Corporate escape room experiences? Yeah.
Because you have to, it's all strategy. Oh, and God. Like how are you under pressure?
Right, how can you work in a team?
Ugh. This is why I worked from home for the last 25 years.
Exactly.
home is the ultimate escape room.
Yes, we should do it. We did a one-day podcast. It was like really more like 3 hours podcasting retreat. And then we were like, look, it's just like we're podcasting, but no one's listening. Look at that.
We've learned so much.
Yes. We should have like stood in the parking lot and stared at each other really closely.
I'd do an escape room with you guys. I wouldn't mind. I'm usually anti-escape room, but
escape rooms.
We should push ourselves to the limit more.
I don't like having to like do a task during fun.
Would you do a task on a cruise? Cruises sponsor Night Call.
Would you do it?
Just dropping another one.
Yeah, I'd do anything over a sponsorship.
Right? Yeah, see?
On a boat with a goat.
I don't even think I'm trying to think if I've been on like a big boat ever. Have you?
Yeah.
Maybe you should do
whale watching a bunch.
Whale watching counts.
That was New England.
Heather, have you had a love boat experience?
No, I don't. I've been on one cruise. I went on a short cruise to the Bahamas for spring break one year, and it was pretty cool.
I got drunk. Was it long? Was it like a week?
I think it was only like 3 hours. It was like Florida to Newport or something.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if I'm getting that distance right. If it was 3 hours or 6 hours, but it was. We didn't spend the night. But there was a lounge. There was entertainment, and I think there might have been like slots and shit like that.
Ooh, riverboat gambling,
yeah, and super corn syrupy drinks, mm-hmm. which is a de rigueur.
I went on a booze cruise like this, but I don't remember if it was. It was also in spring break. If it was in the Bahamas or in Florida, but I got on, had like three drinks, like boom, boom, mm-hmm. boom, and started. Mai Tais. Yeah, yeah. I think they were hurricanes
or rum.
Oh, ooh. Yeah, and then they started throwing up. And didn't stop for the rest of that cruise.
That's amazing. Now was it rolling? Was it? Oh,
yeah.
Are you? Do you get seasick easily?
No, but I throw up from drinking easily.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Mm. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're not done talking about cults, though, you guys. We have a somber cult to talk about, which is the most suspicious couple in the world. They're like Robert Durst level suspicious. But it's sad. So I have to do away with like the jinx thing, because that was also sad, but we all can laugh at Robert Durst now. But over at The Cut, Amanda Arnold recently reported on Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell, the Idaho couple who have been getting a lot of media attention after Vallow's two children went missing at some point and they were last seen in September. They still haven't been located as of our recording right now. The couple fled to Hawaii, I believe, after they'd been questioned by law enforcement about where their kids were. And they were like, oh, they're in Arizona with a family member. But they couldn't locate the kids. And then Lori and Chad fled to Hawaii. And so then people started kind of digging around in Lori and Chad's lives. And they found out that they were preppers. But that wasn't even the weirdest thing. It was they had like three other mysterious deaths connected to them. And they're like, you know, they're very serious preppers. So they, Lori at least, believes that the end times is going to be like this coming July. Do you guys have any plans for the end times?
I better make some.
Yeah. They're members of a group called Preparing a People, which sounds like dinner thing.
Yeah, this story
delicious.
Yes,
more depressing.
It was really depressing
than I knew it was going to be.
This is a story you wish you could talk about if it happened in the past.
I thought you were gonna say you wish you could not have read.
You wish you could not. Well, but you don't know yet what the still like, maybe it's fine.
Well, okay, so the children are missing.
Yeah.
And
but also there were murders associated with these
they
people.
Killed their own spouses.
Well, no,
it appears as if
it appears.
Okay, we don't like, allegedly. Yeah. One of them, their spouse died.
Okay, wait, I'll tell you. So Vallow's brother was named Alex Cox, and so he allegedly shot and killed Lori's ex-husband in July when it was reported to be in self-defense. Cox died of unknown causes 5 months later. So that's two suspicious deaths.
So Lori's brother.
Lori's brother.
Allegedly might have been involved in the murder of her ex.
Yes.
And then Lori's brother shows up dead one day of strange,
and no one knows
unknown
why.
Causes.
And then 2 weeks before Chad and Lori got married, Chad's then wife died of
Tammy.
Tammy died of supposedly natural causes. But then in the wake of all of this stuff, they have exhumed the bodies of those two to see what really went on. But then also,
can I interject with one strange odd thing about this?
Please.
Tammy, when she died, the authorities were interested in possibly doing an autopsy.
Oh.
But Chad said, no, I don't think that's necessary. And the authorities said, that's okay, yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah. They according to this, I didn't read the Cut article. I read like a list of facts that was on
five fast facts you need to know.
It was like kind of long, but it was just a garbage. It wasn't like a narrative. It was strange, but you really got the headlines that were just, what?
Well, so then did you see? I think this was pretty recent. I think it was reported by a Utah Fox affiliate said that Lori's niece, whose name is Melanie Boudreau. Did you see this stuff?
No.
Okay, so Melanie Boudreau had apparently joined the prepper community after Lori joined. And there were some 911 calls, excuse me, placed by her ex-husband. So her husband was like, I don't like that you're being involved in this crazy prepper cult. He took their kids and fled. And then he kept calling the police and being like, someone just shot my window. I'm like convinced it's my crazy ex-wife. So it's like spread into like other facets of the family. But he was at some point, he said, I'm concerned that she's going to harm our children. So all of that's very strange because, like, I don't know if that's connected to the end times, if it's like they're trying to spare their children from the wrath of God. Like, it's so – you could just fall into, like, the black hole of all of this story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also Lori, when she was married, got really into Chad's books about – the end times.
Yeah, so he's a doomsday author, right? It has so much of this reminded me of The Staircase, too. Are you a staircase person?
Yes. That happened in my hometown, Durham, North Carolina.
Oh, that was there.
I was obsessed with that case.
That was, I mean.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Obsessive.
And that documentary is just so good.
Yeah, because you flip your mind back and forth.
Yeah, although the slant of the documentary was messed up because if you followed it in the news and if you're from Durham, it was sort of like, yeah, this guy's for sure.
He obviously did it.
Well, they were definitely on his side, but it's such a good documentary.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Do you believe the owl theory?
No.
No,
not at all. No, no, no. I thought when they discovered the first woman, right, who also fell down the stairs that he knew, and he was the last person who saw her.
He did it. But it just makes you be like, oh, I guess I can't tell who's guilty from, like, listening to them talk.
Right.
Immediately. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, because you thought at first he wasn't guilty.
Yeah, because he seems so genuine.
Well, it's a long time. I mean, it's a, like, what, 14-hour series?
It's long.
It's long. And so you think that at some point, like with the Jinx, when eventually they crack, you would assume he would crack, but
he never cracks. He never says, I did it.
Yeah. And then there was the whole, like, second season of that or whatever that I couldn't actually get into.
Oh, it's good. I mean, it's also like it is one of those cases where he probably did it, but also the cops fucked it up really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, didn't, you know, case the crime scene correctly. And they had this blood spatter expert in the trial who was then, like, stripped of his honors. Yeah. That guy turned out to be kind of a quack, because there is a lot of quackery in stuff like, you know, forensic psychology. And there's, like, a lot of sort of pseudoscience, I feel like, with stuff like that, where somebody can come in and be like, I'm the blood spatter expert. But
I didn't like how the French documentarians were sort of like putting these. I mean, they had a lot of shots of, like, the kind of small town Durham, you know, prosecutors who would say, like, now just look this, you know, and it was like, this man was looking at gay porn the night before he murdered his wife in cold blood. Yeah. And you kind of had that, like, oh God, like, it's easy to watch that. And, you know, and then the documentary, the filmmakers are like, oh, we don't believe this.
stupid rednecks. Definitely that was true. Well, my boyfriend showed me The Staircase because one of his best friends, I think, went to, again, summer camp with one of the daughters who is on Michael's side.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what makes it hard to argue
with. Adopted daughters.
Yeah.
Adopted by the first
from
woman
the
that
first
was
woman, yeah. Yeah,
pushed down the stairs. Sorry.
And the fact that they would side with him is interesting.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. Yeah.
That they would side with him. Well, yeah. But they didn't have... You had that, like, well, they didn't have a parent left because their parent, was their parent and they loved him. People liked him in that neighborhood. My mom was friends with a few people in the neighborhood who were like,
I mean,
he was
super
a nice
charming,
guy.
And he seemed,
he wrote books about murdering and murders and how fun murder, not how fun.
How to get away with it.
I mean, the thing is, it's different when you read it in the paper and you're like, a man who wrote books about murdering. Mm-hmm. Was looking at gay porn, and then looking at gay porn, and then his wife discovered it, and then, I mean, they had a story around it, and it was, you know, of course it was, like, homophobic, and there was bad, you know, it was like bad redneck take on the whole thing.
Every time the information came out, like, there are a bunch of points in that story where you're like, now he's gonna crack, and you're right, he's like, well, I was looking at gay porn, so what, we had an open marriage, like, who, you know, you can't prove that's not true because she's dead now.
It kind of seems like he doesn't think that he's guilty. Like, he's a little...
I think that's it. I think he's successfully convinced himself.
I think that might be true also. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he, like, passes a lie detector test.
Right.
Yeah. And I think he's a former Marine or something like that, right? I might be
that. No, I think you're right. Because if I recall, he had some, like, PTSD kind of issues. Or he just had, like, a traumatic period of his life that he was kind of, like, you know...
Yeah, there's a lot going on with him. He's just such
He could proclaim to be in touch with intense emotions.
It's a good documentary.
So
like
good.
A lot of the other true crime documentaries don't have that impact, but, like, the reason that one's really good is because it really just, like, indicts the viewer. It's you're watching this and you're, like, finding this guy charming and, like, he probably killed his wife.
Yeah.
And also,
it's confusing.
And it's confusing, and you're also, like, taking documentary as fact, which is, like, it's also obviously super constructed.
Yeah. And you're trusting the French.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never do that.
First mistake.
Terrible idea.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for guesting on
my
call.
I loved it.
We are big fans. And
I'm sad that I didn't sing the Love Boat theme, though.
Well, now is your time.
Okay. Love. Exciting and new.
Testy, know it. Come on.
I'm too
Come
shy.
Come aboard. We're expecting you. The Love Boat. That's important. Promises adventure for everyone. The Love Boat. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Soon we'll be making another. I got that wrong. Set a course remix. For adventure, your mind on a new romance. I was born to sing this song.
It's so much it's like the Copacabana to me.
The Copacabana.
You know, all of a sudden you could just go right
talk
in.
Talk about a spooky romance. Copacabana.
We may be putting these on our mix. So if you subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall, you can have access to our mix and a bunch of other fun rewards. Also, if you'd like to follow us on social media, we are Nightcall Pod on Twitter, Nightcall Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And Heather, where should people find you if you want them to?
Well, The Cut, New York Magazine, Ask Polly. If you do a little search on Ask Polly, all my stuff will pop up. And I'm also on Twitter, but my name is very long. H. Averleski. So who knows? You'll never find me.
That's doable.
It's better for you if you don't find me, honestly.
Well, thanks again for joining us, and we will be back next week. Night Call is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.